Welcome to Dots on a Map, the Delta MEC's podcast about scope and our international flying. I'm Captain Brent Allen, the Delta MEC Scope Compliance and Analysis Chairman. With me today is a couple members of our negotiating committee, Chad Smith. He's a 737 captain in Atlanta and the chairman of the negotiating committee, and Brandon Conwell. Brandon is an Atlanta MD-88 first officer. We're going to talk about the Aeromexico joint venture production balance negotiations. Fellas, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having us, Brent.
Brandon, let's kick it off with you. You've been on the negotiating committee now for 5 months. We've been in the negotiation for quite a while compared to previous joint venture LOAs. Historically, we've seen these things go a little more quickly. So can you just give me a brief rundown of what's so challenging about this when we've kind of been down these roads before?
Thanks, Brent. Like you said, it's been over a year since negotiations for production balance began. Right now, we're focused on negotiating upside protections in addition to the historically negotiated downside protections, and therefore looking outside the box to ensure Delta pilots are not left out of the business plan. There are unique reasons that this JV is problematic and needs additional due diligence by the negotiating committee and other members of the MEC. We've heard the pilot concerns loud and clear and must ensure the LOA addresses those concerns. To date, we haven't been able to get those concerns addressed by the company.
Brandon, one of the questions we're hearing in the lounge this week with the engagement after all the communications we've put out is, why do we let Delta enter into these JV agreements? And I frequently hear, hey, why do we let them do this and give away our flying? So can you address that and then maybe tell me some key differences and concerns with a trans-border versus transoceanic joint venture?
Sure. As time changed, Delta has adapted. Going back to about contract 2000, there are some stipulations put in the contract that said how Delta could or couldn't enter into a JV, or as a contract calls it, a profit loss agreement. And one of the main caveats that stops Delta from doing so is Delta aircraft must fly at least 4 round trip flights per week to and from the country of the said JV. In this case, with Aeromexico, Delta already flies 4 round trips per week and then some, so the JV is allowed, the profit loss agreement is allowed. When it comes to the Aeromexico JV, it is different. It's not a trans-Pacific or transatlantic or transoceanic JV. It's a trans-border JV. It does present some different challenges. Instead of being a predominantly wide-body, long-haul flying JV, it's the opposite. It's a lot of close-in, narrow-body flying. With Mexico City being so close to the U.S. border, Delta management's already said, hey, this is our southern hub, this is our Texas hub. And even when you look at Aeromexico, their own management says a lot of similar things about the Mexico City hub being so close to the United States and how its hub is going to help all partners. However, it does present some challenges for Delta pilots. Where Mexico City is located, passengers from, let's say, Central and South America and other places can connect through the Americas or globally through Mexico City and perhaps never touch Delta metal. There's that passenger coming out of Quito or Bogota and wants to go to London. They can come through Atlanta or through Mexico City to get to Europe. Those are the things that are concerning to us, especially since Delta owns 49% of Aeromexico. And with Mexico, they're a growing economy. Mexico's economy is going to grow to one of the top 10 in the world over the next few decades. Central and South America has had its own issues with their economy over the years, but it's still a place that we want to compete, we want to be relevant, but it's a place where Delta pilots want to be able to grow too. And the big question is, would Delta grow just as much in Central and South America with or without this JV?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there when you said the Mexican economy and Central American economy is prime for growth. Obviously, New Mexico City Airport is, I think it's going to handle in excess of 67 million passengers a year. It'll be really huge, and it's geographically located to be ideal for transit to South America or for folks coming from South America to go Mexico City and beyond, Atlantic or Pacific. And the partnership's prime for growth, and we just want to make sure we get our equitable share of that growth on Delta metal. Chad, I'd like to loop you in. It's been a year, and we don't have a negotiated production balance or LOA yet. And how would you characterize the current situation and concerns Aeromexico and Delta might, how they might use that partnership, and why the logjam?
Yeah, that's a good, it's a great question, Brent. And I understand that some of our pilots and maybe even management is getting a little frustrated at the length of these negotiations. And yes, it has been over a year. But the important thing to remember is that it's important to get the deal right. Our pilots are what drives us here on the negotiating committee through their elected representatives. So it's important that our pilots are protected in this agreement above all else. We've already driven in that it's a unique JV. We have JVs, and each one of them is unique, but this one is uniquely problematic due to the ownership piece as well as the common border with Mexico. Several pieces factor into that. We've got to have a fair production balance, which has been the traditional measurement of a JV. But with the ownership piece, we need to see equitable growth growing forward since the countries are geographically located closely to each other. An overall agreement that shows Delta is committed to its pilots and its brand is what is paramount in this agreement. And any agreement that we do arrive to would have to address those concerns and keep Delta in the visual field of the traveling passenger.
Thanks, Chad. Taking all that into consideration, obviously in the last week there's been a great deal of communication come out from the MEC regarding the Aeromexico joint venture negotiations. I'd like to specifically address the table that was released in the chairman's letter that deals with our table positions. I think it's very easy for someone who's not terribly familiar with the scope section, they can look at the sheet and see the difference between our positions in the transborder production balance. We propose 43% Delta metal versus 57% Aeromexico metal measured in ASMs. Now, where'd we come up with the 43%? One of the most frequent questions I get is, why would we propose 43%? So that's based on historical production, right, Brandon?
Correct. At the time we were entering into negotiation with Aeromexico, we wanted to see what we were actually flying. And we looked, and it was roughly 43% of the transborder ASMs. And we counted that by looking at mainline Delta aircraft flying to and from Mexico and mainline Aeromexico aircraft plus their E190s, which that is a mainline aircraft at Delta. So when we looked at that, we're like, okay, that's what we should aim for as far as a transborder production balance.
Right. So, and in response, the company's table position is 33% Delta ASMs or 67% Aeromexico?
It's actually 33% of the seat departures going across the border and 67% for Aeromexico of the seat departures going across the border.
Seat departures, that's a new metric, right? That's something we've never used before.
That's correct. We've never used that metric before in any other JV.
What's the problem with a seat departure? Why don't we want to use seat departures?
Yeah, you're hitting all the good questions, Brent. And seat departures is a very unique metric. We've never used it in any other JV. And this may be a good one to try it out in. However, what seat departures do not take into account is the stage length of the aircraft, how long the aircraft is flying. For example, you could have one 787 with hundreds of seats flying one flight, or you could have several smaller aircraft equating in seats but accumulating a lot more block hours, which equate to pilot jobs. So ASM is a pretty good medium of indicating not only the size of the aircraft, but the stage length and capabilities of that aircraft as well.
Brandon, you mentioned the mainline versus regional or DCI-style aircraft. Why would Delta single out the number of 95? Is that directly tied to the Aeromexico Aero Littoral E190s that is their regional product?
It'd be tough to say exactly the reason why, but the way it works at Aeromexico, there's Aeromexico Mainline and there's Aero Littoral or Aeromexico Connect, which is wholly owned. In fact, the Aeromexico Connect pilots and Aeromexico pilots are on the same seniority list. At Delta, an E-190 is a mainline aircraft. Mm-hmm. So for us, regardless if that's at Aeromexico Connect or Aeromexico Mainline, that needs to be counted as a mainline aircraft because we'd be flying that aircraft on our mainline. We're not counting Delta Connect aircraft crossing the border or Aeromexico aircraft that have less than 77 seats or weigh less than 86,000 pounds. We're just trying to keep things standard with the way it operates in our current Delta pilot.
Okay, I got it. So it ensures that we have a mainline-to-mainline comparison when we go to these production balances.
Correct. Right? Mainline-to-mainline-defined aircraft, yes.
Awesome. When I look down the list, we have a 1-to-1 and a 1-to-1 under America's growth and global growth, and then an NA under the company's position there. So we talked a lot about wanting an equitable share of the future growth of this partnership. How does an America's growth or a global growth, how does that position that we see on the paper there, that 1-to-1, how do we quantify that, and how does that protect our equitable share of the future growth?
Well, basically speaking, it gives us a bigger piece of the pie here. Some people may say, hey, why don't we get at least 50% of the transborder flying? Well, we try to look and say, okay, what are we flying currently? And that's what we'll try to look for the ASM of transborder. But since Delta owns 49% of Aeromexico, and the fact that Aeromexico has 97 37 MAXs on order They're going to have a total of eventually 20 to 21 787s on property. Aeromexico is going to grow. That's a lot of flights they can add to Canada, to Central and South America, and to elsewhere in the world. So in this case, what we're asking for is if Aeromexico adds a flight to, let's say, Barcelona, Madrid, we want to be able to participate in that growth. Just as we own 49% of Virgin Atlantic, there's caveats in the contract. If Virgin Atlantic grows, we grow too, so we don't want Virgin Atlantic to grow in place of us. Same thing with this. Aeromexico is located so close to us. If they start growing globally or in the Americas, we want to have a metric that says, okay, if they grow, we're going to grow too, so we don't get left behind. But let's say we sign the production balance today, and then the next day Aeromexico starts flying an extra flight to Santiago, Chile from Mexico City. We would look at the number of ASMs that is, and we'd say, okay, now Delta has to add the similar number of ASMs in that theater.
Ah, got it. Okay, so they add in the Americas. We have to also add an equivalent number of ASMs in the Americas, and that could be even baked into our business plan, right? Because Delta has a growth plan for upgauging in the domestic market that we've heard so much about. And for global, if you have a long-haul flight out of Mexico City, then somewhere we have to capture a similar amount of growth. And considering that we're 10 times the size of Aeromexico, it doesn't seem to be really a stretch of an ask to say we're 10 times larger, they're adding a few ASMs, big giant Delta Airlines ought to be able to keep up with a one-to-one growth with Aeromexico.
And it also gives flexibility to Delta as well. It doesn't have to be in the same country or same exact region. Sometimes it can be in different parts of the world. But the big thing to take away from this is Delta couldn't add just domestic hours and say, oh, we added ASMs domestically.
Chad, I look at the hub-to-hub balanced production that we proposed, and 37% doesn't seem like a great deal for the Delta pilot. So how do we come up with that number?
Yeah, it doesn't, Brent. You're right. And that's one of the questions we probably get most from pilots. They'll see a whole bunch of Virgin Atlantic 747s in Orlando, or they'll see a bunch of Aeromexico airplanes in LA. That actually was very close to the production balance at the time the JV was incepted.
Okay, so it's similar to the contractual protection we have right now, where when Delta buys more than 25% of another carrier, it triggers that snapshot, that look back. The 37% is actually the hub-to-hub flying ratio when we took that snapshot, right?
Correct. That was the existing production balance at the time, hub-to-hub across the border. Okay. And again, that's why that's a big part of what the global and America's balance does, is we understand that was the existing circumstances at the time. But going forward, all growth is kind of an unknown, and we want to capture a fair share of that growth, which in our mind is equitable.
All right, great. Guys, I think we've really hammered a lot of the questions that I've heard in the lounges about the Aeromexico negotiations. I'd like to put a plug out there for the pilots who subscribe to the podcast. Feel free to write in, send us your questions. We'll try to get those answered. What else you got for us, Chad?
Yeah, I just wanted to wrap up by thanking the pilots for their engagement. It's rare to see the pilots this engaged on an issue, and we're very thankful that they are engaged on the Aeromexico JV. And there's another one coming right around the corner, probably with Korean. So make sure to engage your reps and let them know your opinion on it, as well as your chief pilot's office, because that will feed back up the pipeline towards the upper management ranks. And that is important with regard to our negotiations going forward as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess we could spend a whole nother podcast talking about Korean, because it really is a different deal than what we're looking at with Aeromexico. Brandon, what do you got for us?
Again, thanks again for all the pilots who tune in. One thing to remember with all this is JVs themselves are not a bad thing. They do help us expand our brand to other parts of the world that we necessarily wouldn't get as much exposure to. Because we do have so many new hires on property, a lot of people don't realize Delta traditionally used to fly to Gatwick in London, which is not the airport you want to be at. You want to go to Heathrow. And due to JVs, we got access to those airports, which is a very, very powerful market. In some cases, it does pay to have a partnership. However, just as you, the pilots, have told us, we want to make sure the flying that we do share with our partners is commensurate with what we do, and we can grow as well.
That's a great point. Just like we've all been saying in our comms and in the lounges, it's the equitable share of future growth that we're trying to garner with these agreements. Thanks again, guys. A great pod. Thanks for joining Dots on a Map, and thanks to the pilots for listening. Keep your eyes out for the next episode.